Karma. For sense gratification, after nauti, engages, defeating, I think, yata, by which, the atmana, of the soul, I am, this, asan, temporary. Api, although kleshada, giving misery, asa, become possible, deha, body. Translation, when a person considers self-gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engaged in all kinds of sinful activity. He does not know that due to his past mistakes, he's already received the body which, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it is not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself in pain in the activities of sense gratification, by which perpetually gets material bodies one after the other. Purport, begging, borrowing, and stealing to live for sense gratification is condemned in the first because such consciousness leads one to a dark, hellish condition. The four sinful activities are illicit, meeting, intoxication, and gambling. These are the means by which one gets another material body that is full of miseries. In the Vedas, it is said, asango jaya purushaha, the living entity is not really connected with this material world. But due to his tendency to enjoy the material sense, he's put into the material condition. One should perfect his life by association with devotees. He should not become further implicated in the material body. Text 5, as long as one does not inquire about spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subjected to miseries arising from ignorance. Be it sinful or pious, karma has its result in actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karma atmaka, covered with fruitive activity. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear, and as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activity, he has to accept a material body. Purport, generally people think that one should act very piously in order to be relieved from misery, but this is not a fact. Even though one engages in pious activity and speculation, he is nonetheless defeated. His only aim should be emancipation from the clutches of Maya and all material activities. Speculative knowledge and pious activities do not solve the problems of material life. One should be inquisitive to understand his spiritual position. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, as a blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. Unless one understands the self and its activities, one has to be considered in the material bondage. In Srimad Bhagavatam is also said, Yeni Ravindaksha Vimuktamani Naspayasta Bhavara Visudhavaryaha. A person who doesn't have knowledge or devotional service may think himself liberated, but actually is not. Aruvi Kritrena Parampada Pada Patanchano Naga Yushmadangayaha. Such people may approach the impersonal Brahman effulgence, but they fall down again into material enjoyment because they have no knowledge of devotional service. As long as one is interested in karma and jnana, he continues enduring the miseries of material life, birth, old age, disease, and death. Karmis certainly take on one body after another. As far as jnanis are concerned, unless they are promoted to the topmost understanding, they must return to the material world. As explained in Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam Jamana Mataya Nama Prabhupada. The point is to know Krishna Vasudeva as everything and surrender unto him. Karmis do not know this, but a devotee who is 100% engaged in devotional service of the Lord knows fully what is karma and jnana. Therefore, if your devotee no longer is in karma or jnana, anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karma jnana. The real bhakta is untouched by anything to karma and jnana. Its only purpose in life is to serve the Lord. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activity. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he has already received the body which, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not be have taken on a material body, but has been awarded the material body to sense gratification. Therefore, I think it is not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again and the activities of sense gratification by which the perpetually gets material bodies one after the other. As long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subjected to miseries arising from ignorance. Be it sinful or pious, karma has its result in actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called kamamaka, colored with fruitive activity. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear, and as long as one is absorbed in the fruitive activity, he has to accept a material body. So Rishabhadeva is teaching his sons, as was mentioned earlier, some of his sons became great sages and devotees, others became brahminical, and others became kshatriya. So he is giving instruction to all of these sons about the real meaning of life. So to do so, he condemns material life. Even though he has appointed some of his sons to be kings of the world, still he is condemning material life, particularly that life which is dedicated to sinful activities. Now of course the sons who are going to be kings will have to follow Dharma, so they will avoid sins. Those who are Brahmins, of course, will engage in study of scriptures, etc. And those who are devotees will preach the glories of the Supreme Lord. In all of these cases, they must distinguish between the body and the soul, and between karma, activities which lead to karma, and activities which will get us out of the material bondage. This, of course, is not the ultimate goal, but at least it is one step towards that goal. So in these verses, he is talking just as Krishna teaches Arjuna at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, in terms of not identifying with the material body and understanding that one is atma or completely different from it. So he does that by presenting the negative aspects of material life. And so he describes here that one is in a state of madness or insanity when he performs his dikarma or sinful activities in this material world. So in other words, madness means he cannot perceive things properly. He is in illusion. And he cannot judge what is proper and improper, and what is beneficial for his own self. So why is he engaged in these activities? Indriya pritaya, for the pleasure of the senses. And he wants to get some satisfaction of the senses, and therefore he engages in this activity. What happens is that he is forced into material bodies which give misery one after the other. So this whole series of desiring, doing activities, getting karma, getting bodies, getting suffering, is the process of life in the material world. This is the process of karma. Rishabhadeva is saying, this, I think, is not very good for the living entity to carry on this process of getting material bodies from sinful activity and then suffering in those bodies. This is not proper. The person who does this is an illusion. So this is the very basic proposition. We are suffering in the material world. Why? Because of karma and material bodies. So it's a similar analysis that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita. And it is a common fact in the Vedic literatures, which is repeated over and over. So this is a very basic type of understanding. And the next verse, again, just simply enlarges upon this aspect of karma. people they do not inquire about Atmatattva, the true nature of the self. And instead, they are overcome by desires, and they do sinful activities or even pious activities, and this way they get bound up into the material body. So the basic idea that Rishabhadeva is presenting here is that of bondage to the material body because of our activities in the material world. And consequently, we don't see that we're not the body at all. So these types of activities are an obstacle to understanding the real self, that I'm not the body but I'm the soul. So this is the first step in spiritual understanding, that we should not identify with the material body, that we're something completely different. So, how does one present that? So one can argue on the basis of presenting the negative aspects of material existence. So that is what Rishabhadeva does here. He shows how this identification with material body produces suffering. And not just suffering, but repeated suffering, birth after birth, in a deluded state. So once establishing that, then if a person can accept that, then he will begin to question, what actually should I be doing, and what is the actual truth? And that becomes the inquiry, jigyasa, or inquiry about spiritual life. So he paints a very negative picture of material existence here in these verses. What he is stating is nothing new. It is simply what Krishna has also stated in the Bhagavad Gita and what is stated in other places in the Bhagavatam. But nevertheless, it is a fundamental basis for teaching spiritual life. So, here we have a condemnation of material life. On the other hand, we find in the scriptures, we have karma yoga, which actually encourages one to live in the material world. But, at least in that system, the vikarma is prevented. Sinful activities are forbidden. Now, of course, here it also says that even the pious activities are breeding karma. Nevertheless, karma yoga is a system to avoid, to a maximum degree, the sinful activities. And therefore, as long as one's in the material body, one doesn't have to suffer so much. So that is the advantage of karma yoga. People want to live in the material world, let them do karma yoga, and they can enjoy something here. So they get this desire of satisfying the sense of fulfilled, but under certain conditions. That is, they have to follow rules and regulations. So because here it is stated that even the pious activities breed karma, then even this system is condemned. So that means karma yoga here is condemned also by Rishabhadeva. Ultimately, it is not a spiritual process, so he condemns that also. So, above that we have jnana, which Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita also. He says that jnana is superior to karma. So we do karma yoga and stay in the material world happily and get bondage. So jnana is the first step in getting the real truth. That is, we're not the body, we are Atma. And through this understanding, then one can get liberated from material bondage. So here, Rishabhadeva condemns the karma aspect and he encourages the jnana aspect. As Prabhupada points out in the purport, however, a jnana also is not ultimate. It is one step only. So beyond that, we have the process of getting mercy of devotees and surrendering to the Supreme Lord. So these are steps here in establishing the truth. The first preliminary step, condemning karma, even if it is karma yoga, and then going on to jnana, and understanding we're not the body, we are Atma. But as we know, even understanding Atma is not enough. We also have to understand the Supreme Lord, or the Paramatma. Then we have complete knowledge. So jnana, which only gives us knowledge of Atma, is not really complete knowledge. So that also, if we think it is complete, that also is a mistake. So that is why Prabhupada in the purport is quoted that some people think they are liberated, but because they offend the lotus feet of the Lord, they do not recognize the Lord, and they realize Atma is not the Lord, then they fall from their positions. So the jnana, which only recognizes Atma and Brahman, is not a complete type of knowledge, actually. And therefore it says, these people think they are liberated, vimuktimaninas, but actually they're not, because they don't have proper knowledge. So they fall from their position. The Bhagavatam actually does present full knowledge, and we'll see later that Vrishabhadeva also gives more than this. He gives, goes beyond jnana, and he also gives an understanding of the Supreme Lord. He does give ultimate knowledge. So we should not simply limit his knowledge to condemnation of the material body and understanding Atma, but we should also understand that he is presenting the highest true form of bhakti as well.
Being faithful of Maya is as important as being Krishna conscious. Being faithful of Maya is so important, is as important as being Krishna conscious for this Krishna.
What was it?
Being faithful of Maya. Being afraid of Maya. Is as important as being Krishna.
Well, if we're only fearful of Maya, then we can do two things. We can go into jnana and try for liberation or yoga. So in itself, then, it is not a qualification for bhakti. Simply to reject Maya. One can go for jnana instead. So in bhakti, yes, we are fearful of Maya, but the stronger element there is our attraction for Krishna. Because if we overemphasize the liberation aspect, then we turn into jnanis instead. So in the Nectar Devotion there, Rupa Goswami quotes from the Bhagavatam to say that Shraddha, based upon faith in topics of the Lord from Scripture, which has not too much detachment and not too much attachment for material things, is the qualification for bhakti. So we should not be too detached from the material world in the sense that we're more interested in liberation and simply escaping from the material world, and we're also not too attached to the material world. And so we overemphasize the aspect of condemning the material world. This leads us more into jnana, renunciation of jnana.
In other words, they're actually not liberated.
They're only liberated. Yeah. And Vishnu Chakravarti points out that in order to get liberated, they have to therefore respect the Lord and understand he has a spiritual body. So they do have to have some bhakti of some sort. And jnana itself is a sattvic process, so in itself it cannot give liberation. So the one who liberates is the Supreme Lord. And if he's offended because one doesn't recognize him, then he won't liberate you. So therefore, even the real jnani will have to respect the Lord if he wants liberation. And similar with the yogi. They have to respect the Lord. Otherwise, they don't get liberation.
I think practically it's apparent the yogis and the other kinds of limited. Of course, sometimes annoying in the conversation like this.
If they commit sinful activities, then they're back in the material world with bondage again. It destroys their position. That refers to bhakti, not the other processes. Of course, we see at the end of chapter 6 there says the yogi who, you know, advances, then even if he doesn't succeed, then he succeeds in his next lifetime or whatever. So that is there in one sense, but at the same time, it is said that the jnani who commits sinful activities loses his results of jnana, and he has to start at a lower level again. then if a bhakta commits sinful activity, he doesn't lose that bhakti at all. So there's a difference with bhakti and jnana. Of course, karma, you do sinful activity, then you, of course, have to suffer the result. And immediately get a reaction for that.
Thank you.